Good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to the Emmett County Board of Commissioner meeting for November 6th, 2023. Let's all stand for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let's have the roll call.
Commissioner Lofwell?
Here.
Commissioner Aarons?
Here.
Commissioner Mapes?
Here.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Here.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Here.
Commissioner White?
Here.
Commissioner Coons?
Here.
All present and accounted for. Let's have a motion for approval of the agenda.
I'll make the motion.
I'll second.
All those in favor of approving the agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion passes. Let's have a motion for the approval of the minutes of the October 19th meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor of the approving the minutes of the October 19th meeting, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion carries. It is time for public comment. Anybody wishing to speak, step up to the mic. You have 3 minutes. Seeing nobody come forward, let's go on to MSU Extension. Adam, step forward.
Okay, thank you, commissioners. My name is Adam Coivisto. I'm the District 14 Director for MSU Extension, and I'm proud to present to you our annual report for this year. I do have some help with me tonight. Emily Proctor is here to give you a program update as well. So I'll introduce Emily, have her do a quick program update for you, and then I'll come back and wrap up with our some highlights, questions, and also the addendum. I wanted to briefly talk to you about that as well. So Emily, would you like to come up? Emily is our Tribal Extension Educator. Yeah.
Welcome, Emily.
I appreciate it, Miigwech. Good to see all of you this evening, and thank you for having us. Sawani, and good evening, my commissioners of Emmett County. My name is Emily Proctor. I am a Tribal Extension Educator, and my role is to develop, deliver, and evaluate programs in the areas of tribal governance, tribal leadership, youth tribal leadership, facilitation, and a whole slew of other areas as well. In particular, I work with tribal nations communities to talk with and about those particular areas. And for Emmett County, I also assist in brokering relationships, increasing networks, and bringing resources to our county, our beautiful county here of Emmett. So there are three topics I'd like to share with you this evening. The first one is about industrial hemp. Over the past number of years, we received funding to support an industrial hemp tribal research initiative for Michigan, finally called TRIM. Those partners included Ziba Mijuang, Weishki Bay Farm from Bay Mills Community College, funded by NIFA, and partnered with Lake Superior State University, and again, MSUE. One of our leads was Dr. James Zedecker, who is the director of MSU Upper Peninsula Research and Extension Center. A few of those objectives with regards to this project included assessing growth, yield, and quality of available commercial grain and fiber under the particular local conditions. So here again, how hemp responded to the particular conditions in Carp Lake area. We reviewed the presence of insects and pests and pathogens, studied various weed management methods, and gathered disseminated information on potential opportunities and challenges with regard to industrial hemp. Second initiative is the Obtawang Biosphere Region, so finally known as OBR. And to name a few partners who are affiliated with this particular effort include the Burt Lake Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians, Central Michigan University Biological Station, Little Traverse Bay Bands of Odawa Indians, the Little Traverse Conservancy, Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakeshore, Tip of the Mitt Watershed Council, University of Michigan Biological Station, again here in Pelston area, and the U.S. Forest Service. This is a non-regulatory, non-governmental consortium of organizations. It is a UNESCO-recognized geographical area of globally significant ecological and cultural landscapes, and again, centrally located in northern Michigan. OBR provides a forum for collaboration and to service people and communities in our region. And one final point for OBR, connects people and organizations to collaborate across our water-rich region to protect the integrity of natural systems upon which our region's economy and human well-being rely. And our third initiative is the FERTEP program, so Federally Recognized Tribal Extension Program. This particular year, this effort has been in existence, I'd say, well over 5 years, and Little Traverse Bay Bands is, again, a strong partner, working with LTBB Health Department, Zeba Mijuang Farm, MSUE, and the focus were gardening kits, so the Kitagan kits. And what that was are gardening kits that were provided to tribal families, tribal members, and those who are affiliated with those families, many of which are Emmett County residents. And so they had the opportunity to take home a bag, if you will, cloth bag of cold, hearty food, such as radishes, peas, broccoli, cabbage, pickling, so dill pickles, green beans, onions, pickling cucumbers, salsa, and children's choice of potato, watermelon, pumpkin, or snap peas. And again, those were in a cloth bag. And when they took these home or to wherever they reside, we were providing educational materials such as recipes, kit information sheets on how to grow and care for plants, planting information, and a link to our wealth, our diverse and deep wealth of MSU Extension information. So, yeah.
Thank you. You know, it is dinner time, and you mentioned all
Well, that was only a handful of them. There's a few more. I won't tempt you.
would it be possible just to give a little more detail on the UNESCO designation? I was just reading about that. What it is.
So I did print off a little handy-dandy sheet. So there's a couple hundred of UNESCO biosphere sites.
Biosphere, yep.
And in Michigan, we originally had a biosphere site here in Tip of the Mitt, if you will, so near Pelson. Well, following the reapplication, so it was expired, the UNESCO, so international, had said, you know, is there an opportunity to leverage your resources to build more connections with your local governments, with your educational institutions, with youth, with any regulatory, any community partners, and so they were really looking for this particular biosphere to dive deeper into our local networks. And that is how we came up with this. And so let me go.
Does that indicate that there's some unique, this is a unique biosphere compared to somewhere else?
Yeah. And so non-regulatory, economic, conservation, cultural, social, environmental justice, sustainable economic development. And so it's, in essence, Man and the Biosphere Program is a region of global ecological and cultural significance. So this was originally recognized ours here in 1979. In the initial stages of envisioning and planning the expansion of the support from the biological station beyond. So if you think about it, how we as humans interact with the world around us. How can we partner across not only municipalities, but across land bases, across organizations to think about and ultimately deploy ways for us to live better in our environment, right? And so we think of water and all the great, wonderful resources. So that being one.
Thank you.
Yeah, yep. And if you'd like more, I'd love to share more info that's a little clearer, too. So.
No worries.
Yeah, awesome. Anything else for me?
Any other questions?
And I love questions.
Good.
Yes. Appreciate it.
And Amanda Foster couldn't be here tonight for the 4-H update, but she did give me two things she wanted me to mention. In addition to the normal 4-H program that's always running in Emmett County, two new things that happened this year are a summer adventure camp for kids in the summer where they did a number of field trip types trips around the Petoskey area and the surrounding area. And the other one that she's run twice so far this year is a babysitting class. And it's many hours in the class, but the students come out with CPR certification and first aid certification. And one cute story out of Petoskey, three of the girls from the summer program started their own business and already have a website and a Facebook page, and they're running their own little babysitting business after that class. So she was pretty happy with that one. I thought it was a pretty cute story as well. The other thing I wanted to point out, and I won't spend much time on it, but the addendum to the annual report. The annual report every year focuses mainly on what the local staff are doing here in Emmett County, but a number of MSU Extension educators come in from all over the state to do programs in Emmett County as just part of their normal routine educational programs. So this list is a list of every class that somebody indicated they lived in Emmett County and took from MSU Extension. So some of them, people have traveled to other counties. Some of them, Extension educators have come in on different topics and taught here in Petoskey or Emmett County and other spots. So I always provide this as in addition to the annual report, just to give you another picture of the kind of classes that people take. Varies from year to year, but always another tool for you to look at and consider kind of where the public interest is lying this year in the classes that they're taking through MSU Extension. And with that, did anybody have any questions for me?
Any questions for Adam? I guess not.
All right.
Did a good
job.
Thank you.
Guess Dave is up next.
Thank you. In my report, you will see in the airport, I've sent some photos. Our fire rescue truck up at Pelson has finally gone into production. So there's a 450-day build time on this unit. It's just getting in line, so we're glad to see that. We're also glad to see that there's going to, hopefully, by the time this truck gets delivered, that the product that will go inside of it, the firefighting foam, will not contain PFAS. So the goal is not to put any PFAS-related fire foam in here, as there's some new foams being introduced that don't have PFAS. Just talking about PFAS a little bit, too, up in Pelston last week, we had a town hall meeting where Eagle was there, the health department was there, the county was there, anybody involved in Pelston, OHM, which is a consultant hired by the village to do. They received a grant to look at water systems and whole house filtration systems. We had a good turnout at the meeting. The public was there, was able to ask questions and what's going on, what's happened so far. So it was a good event. Parks and Recreation, you'll see that they're doing some tree planting out at Camp Petasiga. We have a real problem in that area. We're looking to absorb some water and add some more shade out there, so you'll see what's going on there. Petoskey still had 225 rentals in October, which was very good. The holiday weekends were filled up. Planning and zoning, I'll wait till next week and let you folks talk about planning and zoning and what's going on there. The Northwest Michigan Community Action Agency was one that one of our staff members was assigned to. You'll see his report. Since Dave's been on the committee, they've already assigned him as the treasurer now, I think, on the association. So. We'll have good insight there. They talk about all the programs that they're offering, what's offered here. We do have some proposals on the website right now for bids, the online storage service, architectural engineering services, and the replacement baler for DPW. We spent the last month working on budget. Unfortunately, Pam's under the weather tonight, but we've made it through most of you on the first round of budget hearings. Brian's left to go, and plan on the first meeting in December having the budget presentation to the board.
Thank you. Any questions for Dave? And we come to no unfinished business, so we come to new business for the agreement for the extension service.
You heard the report tonight on the extension service and programs offered there. If you went through the report, you'll see all the services offered. One of the big things is the 4-H program, and that continues to grow. And I'm sure Agnes would talk about how great that is at the fair and the amount of money that's brought in for scholarships that helps the kids out. So what we have before us, this agreement goes back many, many years. It's $83,443. That is a 3% increase over last year. As we know, everything that we're doing right now has an increase in it.
Let's have the motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the attached renewal of the MSU Extension Services to Emmett County for fiscal year 2024 in the amount of $83,443 and authorize the county administrator to sign the contract on behalf of the Board of Commissioners.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Would you like to hear from Agnes about what's going on, or are you? She's here.
Do you want to say something, Agnes?
Come on up, Agnes.
How'd 4-H do, Agnes?
Well, I'll tell you, since we've hired Amanda Foster, she is really moving and shaking with the kids. She has a lot of programs out there, has brought a lot of kids in to the program, although they're only this high. But she's got participation way up, as far as I'm concerned, and she's doing an excellent job in making sure those kids stay interested in the program. We have our horse department, if you want to call it that. Every stall we had was full this year. I can tell you probably 4 years ago and we had a whole empty barn. It does go on age, ebb and flow, but she has even got the little kids interested in sharing a horse with a buddy. It can't be better. Amanda is doing a fantastic job.
Wonderful.
Anybody have any other questions?
How'd the sale go?
The sale was phenomenal this year. We have local businesses that support our kids. It was like $298,000 for the kids. Now, the fair doesn't realize any money from that other than we have a pie auction. You know, all of that is involved in our major sponsors held up with the kids. Quite a few of the major sponsors donate the animal back for a resale. The kids certainly have put their heart and soul into preparation of these animals, and it shows. The judges, when they always come to our fair, they say it's far and few between that they find every animal finished at the fairs they go to. And it doesn't matter what the species is. We always get complimented on our kids, their knowledge, and the preparation of their animals.
I was very impressed with Meyer Grocery Store had representatives, and they bought several animals and then donated them back.
They did. Dave Kring is another very, very loyal supporter. I mean, he's been there for all the years that I've been there. Fletch's is another big supporter. Mm-hmm. They always, always donate over and above, and they always help the kids out. And Dave Kring, what he does, the animals he actually purchases and takes home or to processing, he then turns around and donates all that meat to MAMA, which means that all of the food banks get that, so the kids benefit. The food banks benefit, and it's a win-win all the way around for everyone.
It's good to see the community come together that way.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They even Dave Kring and that bunch, they supported the kids through COVID, which was a very difficult year for the kids. It was difficult for them to do it online, and obviously sales were down, animals were down, but they've come back. They've come back, and they're very supportive of mm-hmm. what the kids learn, the business ethics that they learn, the ability to stand up and talk in front of adults. That's very important because there's a lot of kids that can't do that now. And they really pride all of their meetings, classes, and that they gear it towards communication with adults and with the community.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Atkins.
You're welcome.
Well, so we have a motion and a second, several seconds, by the way. Let's have the roll call.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Alfbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Coons?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Aarons?
Yes.
And the motion passes. So we have on the docket a public hearing which was canceled for this housing involving local livability. And you want to give a comment?
Just very quickly. So we received this grant application. The timeline for this was very tight. We brought it to you at the last meeting, and we thought that we'd be able to meet the qualifications requirements of the grant. As we got more involved with it, we determined that, no, we can't meet those guidelines. There's a second round to it, and we have planned to reapply for that grant. We're not the only county out there. Their timelines were very tight, and the requirements, we just couldn't meet at this time. So we had it. We thought we would make it, but we didn't, and we will go for round two.
Okay, so now it's up next on the agenda is a public hearing for the Maple Block Flats.
Now I have Tammy introduce.
Thank you. Tammy Dornberg, Brownfield Redevelopment Authority Secretary today at this moment. Last meeting, you authorized a public hearing for the Maple Block Flats Brownfield Plan. The plan was presented to you. An introduction to that plan was made, and that plan has not changed since that meeting. It's been on the website, and then we notified and provided the plan to all the taxing jurisdictions on October 23rd, which it's required to be provided to them at least 10 days before the meeting. Several of them did reply that they had received it. So that is something that we have done. So the Act does require a public hearing. So this is the opportunity to review the plan and assure that it will have a public benefit for our community. City of Petoskey has concurred or approved the plan. They were the first ones to approve it. The Brownfield Redevelopment Authority has also approved and recommended that the Board of Commissioners consider approving as well.
Would you like...
Sorry, one more thing. In this particular case, Mac McClellan from Otwell Mabee is not the Emmett County consultant. He is the consultant for the developer. The Emmett County Brownfield Redevelopment Authority did hire Fishbeck, and Susan Winslick is on Zoom at our request to answer questions that you might have as related to this plan. And then Mac McClellan is here representing the developer.
And you've heard the plan in the past. I don't know if you'd like Mac to come up and give a quick revisit of the plan, then you'll open up a public meeting, have public comment, and then you'll be able to answer questions or ask questions after that.
Why don't we go ahead and do that, Mac?
Thank you. As Tammy mentioned, I'm Mac McClellan, over to the dark side of the developers. Representing Maple Block Flats in Great Lakes Capital in this case. With me tonight is Jeff Smoke and Isaac Hall. Jeff is the principal of Great Lakes Capital, and Isaac is an analyst with Great Lakes Capital if there's any specific questions about the project. I am happy to run through the presentation again, or I can give you the elevator speech, whichever you would like.
I think we saw it last meeting, so why don't you just give us the elevator speech,
okay,
unless there's any other questions.
Yeah, that's great. I have said in the past that this kind of represents, this checks all of the boxes for brownfield projects. It's a large industrial facility that has significant asbestos in it and requires a significant amount of demolition, over $1 million worth of demolition in that case. It has environmental contamination on the site, relatively widespread because of fill materials and the past historic operations, and as well it has unstable soils that don't allow for conventional foundations. So you have to put in special foundations to hold up the buildings. There's a potential for vapor intrusion in these buildings, and so we're going through a process to determine that now with some additional sampling. But there may be a need for a vapor mitigation system underneath the buildings, some or all of the buildings there to do that. So it really has the full gambit, all of the issues that are in place. In addition, there's a strong interest in providing workforce housing, so half of the units are allocated for workforce housing, up to 120% AMI for the project, 102 of those units. 25 of those units are targeted towards 100% AMI. Kind of the fact and reality is that the starting out rents are kind of lower than that point anyway in this case. And AMI is an interesting concept. It is annually calculated each year, and so the actual rents have to be below that cap mark. It's whatever your salary is, and 30% of your salary is the rental units divided by 12, of course, for the rents. And so as a result, each year, this project also has a missing middle grant from MISHDA, as well as the Brownfield Housing TIF. And so each year, both MISHDA and the Brownfield Authority will be reviewing all the rents and incomes from the project. And so there's an ongoing opportunity and situation and oversight. One other thing that I wanted to kind of highlight is, too, that this document before you is like a budget document. It lays out the maximum amount of eligible activities. The actual reimbursement will be based on invoices that are for each of the eligible activities, reviewed and approved by the Brownfield Authority, and that sets the maximum eligible activity budget. It can't go over that amount and will likely be less. So there's continued documentation that occurs throughout the project as well. Let me see what else I wanted to talk about. I meant to introduce Jeff and see if he had any comments as an intro person. Jeff or Isaac?
Thank you, Mac. This is Jeff Smoke with Great Lakes Capital. I'm the developer on the project, and I really appreciate everyone's time tonight. We're looking forward to this project and happy to answer any questions.
Does anybody have any questions for Jeff at this point?
Just a quick question. So the 100% and the 120% AMI, how long is that the restriction in place?
Yeah, that's for a period of 22 years for the TIF capture.
So let's define AMI.
Yep. Area median income is approximately $75,000 for Emmett County. $68,000. $75,000 would be the 120% AMI. Jeff, I'm not sure if you want to talk about the target rents at this point in time for one bedroom and two bedroom, but can give you an idea about what those rents are. So. Or I can as well.
This whole development, or at least 50% of those units, are based off the MISHDA AMI guidelines. And so approximately trying to keep that one bedroom under $1,200.
So we'll be in that case. So half of the projects will be market rate, half of the apartments will be market rate, half of them will be within the AMI limitation. And what we found over time is that the rents increase at a little larger gap, 4% typically, in that area, and the AMI increases at about 2.5%. So that gap will increase. This will hold those rents for those AMI targeted units lower than the cost of inflation, even in that case, at rent inflation. So over that time period.
Okay.
Let me just.
Mac, I know you explained it the last time, but if this project does not go through, the taxes that are being paid are still going to be paid, no matter who owns it, right?
Yeah, there's a a level of taxes that the property is assessed right now. Those taxes will continue to go to the taxing jurisdictions. And this project is only made possible by these incentives. And so that incentives, those opportunities that happen, will be able to increase there and be able to come back and repay some of those extraordinary costs. So without the incentives, the project doesn't move forward. Nothing happens on that site for a period of time, and those taxes continue to go to the taxing jurisdictions. One other point that I wanted to make was kind of the level of investment on the project and sort of the incentives. One of the wonderful things that I think we've been able to do is garner a lot of state support for the project. There's a missing middle grant of $5 million, an Eagle Brownfield grant of $1 million, a blight elimination grant of $1 million, and a community revitalization program from MEDC of about $3.7 million. So that the areas where the locals are contributing, and the state certainly wants that local contribution in order to allocate these costs, are for the tax abatement and for the Brownfield TIF. Kind of all told up, the state is providing 67% of all of those costs, of all the incentive costs. The city is about 16%, the county is about 8.4%, and the other taxing jurisdictions are about 7.5%. So what is kind of happening with the project is leveraging local dollars, getting a 67% state grant, basically, both upfront and over time, to help support the project. So I think there's been great support for the project to come in. There is a significant amount of developer equity that is going into the project as well, about 25% of that. The balance is financed through private financing, public grants and loans, and other sources. So there's a significant investment on the part of the developer as well. So.
Okay. Do we have any other questions for Mac? Okay. Let's open it up to the public. Anybody wishing to speak about the project? Come on up. Yes, we are.
This is my Carla Buckmaster. This is my interpretation of some rules. And Chairman Genup, I respectfully ask that you extend my comment time. You will understand as I proceed to take time to address the need for one of your fellow commissioners to recuse himself for potential conflict of interest with housing issues and associated with the brownfield plan that is the subject of this hearing. The commissioner already should have recused himself. Doing so is not a shameful act, but rather the honorable act and a part of the commissioner's code of ethics. The commissioner is considered a key employee who sits on the board as president of Northern Homes Community Development Corporation, which is a nonprofit developer of affordable homes and apartment communities, with associated jobs like this corporation already being property managers for various area apartments, such as Petoskey's Maple Village 1 and 2 near Lowe's, collecting the rent, taking calls for maintenance issues, a property manager. Imagine the proposed Maple Block Flats 204 apartments when completed, needing a future potential property manager like his corporation can provide. A very lucrative, sought-after position. This commissioner sits also on the chair as the chairman of the Brownfield Redevelopment Authority, with overseeing and making housing decisions from which he potentially could benefit. As chairman, he already signed the Brownfield Plan for Maple Block Flats resolution after a Brownfield meeting on October 10, 2023. He should have recused himself from such. At their last Brownfield meeting, for instance, he rightfully recused himself when discussion was held regarding Petoskey's other housing development called the Lofts at Lumber Square on Emmett Street. Now he needs to stand tall and recuse himself and leave the room when these housing topics are discussed and voted, as for Maple Block Flats at this hearing. I'll pause here for the moment it might take for the commissioner to forthwith recuse himself at this time.
Well, as I've explained to Mrs. Buckmaster numerous times, my presidency and my membership, 20 years on Northern Homes, is a volunteer position. No funds. I don't receive any kind of compensation. I've been involved in affordable housing in both Emmett and Charlevoix counties and for many years, and I don't to recuse myself would mean I'd get a direct monetary or financial benefit. I get nothing from Northern Homes except to go down, and the director does put out grapes and peanuts for us to eat, so I do get those. But other than that, I don't get anything else from Northern Homes, so I don't see any conflict of interest. Mr. Boyer?
I would defer that to the attorney, but Mr. Jopik is on the line right now.
Mr. Jopik?
Maybe he could, David.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. With regard to conflicts of interest and recusing, by the way, can you hear me okay? Because I am getting a signal that you might not be hearing me well.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, thank you. So in terms of conflicts of interest, what I'm hearing from the commissioner is that there is no existing contract in place and he receives no pecuniary or monetary benefit or income from the decision being made in this matter. He is not contractually connected and he is not part of the entities that are coming forward, the property owner, the developer coming forward with respect to this transaction. In the absence of that, I don't, looking at the code of conduct and the board's rules, I'm not seeing the existence of an actual conflict of interest here that would fit within any of the parameters of those rules.
It can't be a potential conflict of interest, and there must have been something going on with this corporation for him to recuse himself in regard to the very recent project that went on. And just by taking the monetary value that comes from this corporation and putting it through a family trust or whatever, I still see it as a conflict of interest.
Is there a time limit on public comment?
I don't understand what financial, what
I don't
family
know
trust.
Either.
I don't get any money. I'm a volunteer. I do it for the good of affordable housing in the state.
What was your reasoning for recusing yourself at the
last
So
we wouldn't have this long discussion on it a long time ago. I thought it was easier just to walk away so we could get the project done. And Northern Homes was a manager and owner of the lofts at Lumber Square. Northern Homes doesn't have anything to do with Maple Flats. Not
but
a thing.
You have the potential conflict.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think this conversation falls under the rules of public comment, and I think we're varying from our...
I think we just need to move on, Mr. Chair, unless the board sees
comment.
A problem with what's going on.
I asked the chairman if I may have...
I didn't hear him
time.
Respond in the positive.
So I will give her the leeway here. So let's move
Thank
on
you.
to the comments.
Okay. Now I have...
Go ahead.
Commissioners, do not conflate the project to needed housing with the Brownfield plan. The project is fine. Housing is needed. The plan, however, is questionable. To achieve the project is not reasonable for either the taxpayers or for half of the potential renters. Act 381 and common sense require the plan to be reasonable and to serve a public purpose. A reasonable plan, is it reasonable for taxpayers to pay more than half of the $51 million project? For taxpayers to pay more than the developer who reaps the long-going profits? Two, reasonable for the school's voted 1.43 sinking fund tax millage to go instead to the developer's pocket? Three, reasonable to make an agreement with an unknown entity? Who owns the property? The LLC and the equity company have no skin in the game, even with a purchase agreement. Four, reasonable to know what might happen to the renter's expenses if the property gets sold. Reasonable to not know how long the developer must be a part of the plan. To not see a developer's written signature anywhere, but many governmental resolutions legally signed. Oh, that's right. How does an LLC sign its name? Five, reasonable that no security-type bond or assurance or guarantee exists in case the project is not completed, like the hole in downtown Petoskey. Six, reasonable that a map shows places and kinds of contaminants and the plan states that soil removal, transportation, and disposal must happen, but no details regarding that. Where is it going to be disposed? Who disposes it? No information showing bids or how the cost actually was determined. That's not reasonable. Seven, reasonable to not state a plan to house the construction workers when a housing shortage exists? Eight, reasonable that realistic beginning and completion dates for the entire total project are not noted? Needs to be a public purpose plan. Is a public purpose served when the three-story buildings will have no elevators? Aren't handicapped people part of the public?
30 seconds.
Handicapped people might not want to be in the first floor. Maybe somebody on the third floor even isn't handicapped, but perhaps they have a handicapped visitor. Is it reasonable, public purpose being served when the workforce or moderate housing units are supposed to be for half the units, but it's not written how much the actual rent will be? The flawed plan just says half the renters cannot have an income greater than a percentage of AMI, and the plan has changed those numbers over the last few months, too. But how much will the rent be? I heard Mac try to explain it, but that's not written in the plan that you're going to okay or not okay. It's not written there. Developing a housing complex is admirable, but the project plan is not reasonable for either the taxpayers or for half of the potential renters. Taxpayers should not have to pay for more than half of the project that will consider the diverse and ADA requiring renters. A plan that charges whatever rent they wish for whatever time frame they wish. This plan is the developer's demand.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'd like to have, go ahead.
Okay. Courtney Wilbur, so my understanding of this process is that if I'm friends with Rich Ginnup, I can speak for however long and to whoever I want in whatever fashion. I think that's how we're doing this now. I just wanted to first say that housing is desperately needed in this area. This is my hometown. I moved back here, I think, 2021. Just this summer, I was able to find a home. Just this summer. Up until that point, I was living in an apartment owned by a family member. And that is a privilege that I have been given by having a family member who has that space. But most people up here can't find housing. And wages in this area are alarmingly low. The reason I was able to afford to buy a house is because my partner works remotely for a company in Grand Rapids. There are not jobs up here that allow for people to buy houses. It is absurd. We need housing. And he did say how much. He said, I think you said 1,200, right? That's still quite a feat. That's very difficult to pay. That's almost what I paid when I lived in Boulder, Colorado, and Minneapolis proper. So that's a little concerning to me. But I just wanted to say that a lot of these questions that Carla had the answers are available if you talk to the right people instead of just coming up here and attacking Commissioner White. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak? So I'd like to give Mac a chance to reply to some of the questions that were brought up, if you would.
I was really targeted. If you have some questions that I don't address, I'll just try and address a couple. One of the concerns was, and as I had mentioned, this is really a brownfield plan. It's like a budget document. We're going to have a whole lot. There's already an Eagle grant and loan agreement and an implementation agreement that the developer has signed that lays out all of those issues. Every expenditure of the Eagle work plan Eagle grant is going to have to be done by a work plan that's approved by Eagle for all of those activities. Same is true with the blight elimination agreement as well. The missing middle, MISTA is going to be looking over all of these things. We'll have actually a brownfield reimbursement agreement between the brownfield authority and the developer, which lays out a lot of the stipulations and situations and monitoring and evaluation. We kind of stick to the requirements of the brownfield plan under Act 3D1, provide that again as a budget document. So there is a whole lot of backup documentation and activity that's going to happen over that time. Just with respect to all of these items, each of the items all have to comply with state, federal, and local regulations. The site plan has gone through all of the site plan review by the city, evaluating all of those opportunities. there. Any of the disposal of contaminated soil will have to go to one of the type 2 landfills in the area. By Eagle regulations, we have to have manifests and also weigh tickets at the landfill that will be documented provided there. So it's a pretty highly regulated activity, not all included within the brownfield plan again, but we use that as the guidance from the state of what information is provided in the plan. It is a plan. It's a budget document, and there will be lots of work that goes on before. One other thing I wanted to mention is the other thing is that the requirements of the brownfield plan and the reimbursement plan really kind of go with the property. So if the project is sold, now it's Great Lakes Capital's modus operandi to build and operate long-term projects. But if it is sold, all those same obligations have to be maintained. And then the brownfield authority has to approve any assignment agreement of any of the brownfield TIF revenues. They need to know where those go. So there's a process by which if the property is sold, it doesn't prohibit it, but it does provide for assurances that the requirements of the brownfield plan will be met, and as well, any of the reimbursements will be met as well. My understanding, Great Lakes Capital has spent quite a bit of money, almost $500,000 now of its own money to try with all the civil activities, all of the consultants that have been involved in the project, all the work that's been gone. That doesn't include their time and energy in that as well. So they do have quite a bit of skin in the game. I also want to say that one great thing about brownfield projects is that there really is little risk to the local units of government. All the risk is on the developer. If the project doesn't proceed, or if they start and expend all these money and the project stops and there's no revenues, there's no obligation to repay any of those expenses for that. The only kind of obligation under all of this proposal and project is under the Eagle Brownfield loan, there is an obligation for the city to repay the loan if there's not revenues. That obligation is backed by an irrevocable letter of credit that can be drawn on, that the developers provided, that the city can draw on if there's not revenues. So in essence, there's no risk to the project. There have been projects in the past where the city expended money up front and then the project didn't proceed and they were at risk for that. In this case, there's no expectation of any public dollars going in up front with the anticipation of being returned for those dollars for the project. So I understand, and I think it's very important to review these carefully, to look at all of those pieces. But there's a whole lot of activity and protections in place as the project is implemented and proceeds to ensure that all of that accounting is appropriate and all the activities comply with the laws. I'm happy to answer any other questions that I may not have covered.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm assuming, listening to you talk, that it sounds to me like that the state and the city has more to do with this project. We're just approving the brownfield part of the plan. Is that what we're here for?
Yes, you're one of the components because it's a county brownfield authority that the county board, the governing body, approves the plan.
Okay, but the state and the city probably has the answers to most of the questions.
The state is certainly interested with 67% of the funding up front. Uh-huh. And the city, we had quite an extensive process with the city going through that as well.
So they would probably have some of the numbers that Carla is probably interested in.
We have lots of numbers and information. That's available, and I have kind of a written response. Be happy to provide that too. So.
Mac, using state funds, are you required to do a bidding process then, or do you have contractors lined up?
For the Eagle grants, for the blight elimination grant, those require bidding contracts. Yeah. Competitive bidding over $20,000.
Any other questions?
What happens if the plan goes bankrupt after 22 years?
If the project goes bankrupt after 22 years? My guess, and maybe Jeff is a better person to respond to this, but usually bankruptcies occur in the early years after you're still providing the bank loans and can't meet the payments, so that usually comes up a little bit more quickly than that. If that happens, after 22 years, there's no repayment. There's still an asset on the books. Let's say, for example, if that happens, 22 years, it goes bankrupt, somebody will buy it for 25 cents on the dollar and continue to operate that.
Any other questions? questions from the audience for Mac? Anybody have any questions? Hearing none, let's move on.
You need to close the public hearing.
I'll make a motion to close the public hearing and move back into open session.
I'll second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Let me find my way here. So, that brings us to the resolution. Is that correct?
There's a resolution in your packet, and I know that this was changed. There was a date that was corrected in this.
Yes, this was included in the online agenda, but on your desk tonight there is an updated resolution for your consideration, with the only change on the last page where Suzanne Canine would be certifying that this is true and correct copy. The date was changed to reflect today's date rather than the Planning Commission's date of November 9th, which was in the packet.
Thank you for that correction. Yes. Has everybody had a chance to read the resolution? Do we want it read right now? I guess we need a motion.
I move to approve the brownfield plan for Maple Block Flats at 1420 Standish Avenue, Petoskey, Michigan.
We have a motion.
Second. Should we read it into the record?
I didn't see a written motion in the packet. Unless I missed it.
It is.
We have a motion. No, unless I just made the motion, I think.
Yes, I'm waiting for Matt to finish.
Yeah, I just made the motion because I didn't see it written.
That's good. Thank you. We have a motion, and Neil made the second. So let's go ahead and have the roll call on this.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Loftbaum?
No.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Fields?
Yes.
Commissioner Ahrens?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Motion passes. Moving on to Keep It Real.
Keep It Real is a contract from year to year. This is our social marketing company that we work with on the fair. You can see that works on our Facebook, our Instagram, works on our fair book cover. The proposal tonight is for $12,750.
Okay. Could we have the motion?
I'll make the motion. I move that the board approve the contract for Keep It Real Social to provide marketing services for the 2024 Emmett-Charlevoix County Fair in the amount of $12,750 and authorize the administrator to sign the contract.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Any questions for Agnes? She's still here. Come on, let's have some questions. Let's stump her.
Can't stump Agnes.
Good luck.
Let's have the roll call.
Commissioner Ahrens?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Koontz?
Yes.
Commissioner Loftbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes. Motion passes. And now we have the wheelway mowing.
Thank you. 2 years ago, as we were going through budget and process and manpower, one of the things that we looked at, we were spending two staff members about 32 hours a week to do mowing. Last year was the first year we contracted a portion of the mowing out along the Little Traverse Wheelway. It worked so well, and that agreement, we had 2 one-year extensions, so this would be the extension for the second year of mowing to Northern Lawn Services, LLC, not to exceed $28,000 for the summer. Mowing season.
Thank you, Dave. Could we have the motion read?
Mr. Chair, I move the board approve the mowing service agreement with Northern Lawn Service in the amount of $1,260 per mow, up to $28,000, and authorize the administrator to sign the same.
Second.
We have a motion and several seconds. Let's have any discussion, first of all. Let's have the roll call.
Commissioner Loftbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Coons?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Aaron's?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Motion passes. Up next is the prosecuting attorney.
This agreement tonight before you, the Prosecuting Attorneys Association of Michigan has provided funding for this criminal case management solution across the state of Michigan. This is a system that the entire state uses. The Prosecuting Office Association is going to fund the initial cost of approximately $87,800 and the annual support service for the next 2 years. The initial cost of 87 is to get the program. They're going to cover that, and then they're going to cover the support services for the first 2 years, so it's not a hit on all the counties going towards this. There is some additional storage that Emma County is responsible for. That will be $10,000 a year. Really, with any management system that we have a cost of storage that storing that additional site. The prosecutor's office is in favor of this and really has no choice because this is what's going to be provided statewide.
Thank you. Could we have somebody read the motion?
I will, Chair. I move the board approve the attached agreement between the Prosecuting Attorney Association of Michigan, Carville, and Emmett County, including the purchase of $10,000 of additional storage, and authorize the county administrator to sign all necessary documents.
We have a motion.
Second.
And a second. Any discussion?
Chair, I do think it's unfortunate, though, that we couldn't find an in-state supplier of some software for this endeavor. I mean, the whole state's going to use it, but it's not a Michigan company.
Well, I think a lot of our software companies are located in Michigan also, but this is the association's pick, and the association is paying for it.
Yeah, I understand.
I agree with you. But.
Yes, I agree also. Let's have the roll call.
Yes.
Commissioner Aaron's?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Coons?
Yes.
Commissioner Lockwell?
Yes.
And the motion passes. Up next is rezoning.
Yeah, tonight before you there is an amendment to the contract, and what they're doing is consolidating zoning districts. Tammy is here if there's any questions, or Tammy, do you want to give a brief update on this one?
That would be great. Tammy Dornberg, Emmett County Planning and Zoning Director. So several months ago, we worked with Civil Council to review our entire zoning ordinance, and one of the recommendations was, could you consolidate some of your zoning districts? So we started to look at that. We worked with the townships that had commercial zoning districts, and in Littlefield Township, we have 13 parcels, actually 12 parcels that are zoned B3. They're the only ones in the whole county to zone that way. And so we sent out letters to all the property owners and invited them to a meeting and talked to them about this proposal to maybe rezone their properties. They were all in favor. They said, we don't know why this was done in the first place. One property owner actually asked to have his parcel that wasn't included in the B3 zoned rezoned as well. So now all the properties will be from Alanson Village Limits south to a property that's owned by Little Traverse Conservancy along US 31 Highway on the east side, rezoned from B3 to B2, and then that will also allow us to eliminate the B3 zoning district from our ordinance altogether. So it's a consolidation at this point. Littlefield Township recommended approval twice, and the County Planning Commission recommended approval after public hearings.
Okay, let's have someone read the motion, part one and part two.
I will, Chair. Part 1. I move to rezone all properties located on the east side of US 31 Highway, south of the village of Alanson, zone B3, commercial/industrial, to B2, general business, including all tax parcels identified in the legal notice. Also, to rezone one parcel zoned SR Scenic Resource to B2, general business, tax parcel ID number 24-07-17-16-400-023, 8503 US 31 Highway. The rezoning has been reviewed and recommended for approval following several public meetings, including one public hearing. The rezoning is approved based on the facts of the case and because the standards of the zoning ordinance for rezoning have been met, including the master plan supports the rezoning and Littlefield Township has recommended approval. There's a part two that says I move, so it's like, is that going to be a separate motion someone else makes?
I think it's all in one motion.
It's all in one.
Yes, go ahead, Steve.
I'd recommend doing it in two motions because you wouldn't get to motion number two if motion number one doesn't pass.
I see. All right. Okay.
Recommend proceeding with part one first, and then if that passes, going to part two.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll second part one.
Okay, we have a motion for part one and a second. Let's have the roll call.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Coons?
Yes.
Commissioner Ahrens?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Loftbaum?
Yes.
And the motion?
Part two. I move to amend the Emmett County Zoning Ordinance by removing Article 12B-3, Commercial/Industrial District, and all references to Article 12. The Zoning Ordinance text amendment is necessary to remove a non-existent zoning district and to consolidate the Zoning Ordinance standards as identified in the Emmett County Master Plan. The text amendment meets the standards of the Emmett County Zoning Ordinance, Section 27.11.
We have a part two motion and a second. Let's have the roll call.
Commissioner Loftbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Ahrens?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Coons?
Yes.
And the motion passes. And that brings us down to the announcement for the next meeting. The next meeting.
No public comment.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did that last night, too. Brings us down to the point of public comment. Anybody wishing to speak at the mic, step forward.
Carla Buckmaster. I think you're all smart enough to realize that my previous comments were not because I'm against housing. I desperately think we need housing. I did write a letter, an email to commissioners last evening that had a better explanation, but I knew it was too long. I'm going to give Susie a copy of my communication, which evidently none of you gave her. I don't know. But to be put into the minutes. But one of the things that I thought was really important, and it was spoken about in another public comment, was when I explained the 102 units will be for households earning less than the AMI, which was explained, and that was written in the plan. But nothing is written about the actual rent level. For instance, qualifying under the AMI of about $63,488, a renter earning an average local wage of $20 per hour, and that's a pretty good wage here, that's $40,000 a year, could afford $833 per month, considering a typical affordable housing cost rent locked to a maximum of 25% to 35% of household income. Unless this plan is written more completely, those in need of housing will not really be accommodated. And that's what my point was. I think even with that plan, you're still going to have people who are hurt as far as wanting to rent what they are terming in the plan affordable workforce housing. Unless they get something written in. If it's not written in the plan, which a lot of the statements that I was making are not written, how are you going to enforce anything when they do what they want to do? They had suggestions. I went to the city meetings where they talked about it. They had suggestions from their planning committee. I think there were 11 points from one of their suggestions. I don't see any of them in the plan. They were made. They were supposed to be changed. It's not there. I'm hoping for good results. I'm hoping that people will be able to afford it. I noticed the lofts at Lumber Square. I saw somewhere where their rents are going to be down to $315 for one of their units. You're not going to see that here. That's not what they're talking about. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla. Anybody else wishing to speak? Now it's time for the announcement. The next board meeting for the county commissioners will be November 16th in this room at 6 o'clock. We need a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
And a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.